Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and today's conversation is with Ellen Embry, Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Terry Ergens. Ellen, any single service member's career will involve multiple moves and deployments that can take him or her all over the globe. Tell us about your efforts to improve the continuum of care a service member receives from the time they enter the military service through their various deployments, perhaps injury and rehabilitation, all the way to their transition to the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Well, I think the most important change in how we've done business over the last 7 years is to impose regular health assessments on the force. What we've learned about traumatic brain injuries in the ongoing operations, we are more careful now to evaluate cognitive capability and function at the point of entry into our system and prior to deployment. We also learned that just assessing the health of individuals before and after deployments was not assuring that we were doing, if you'll pardon the analogy to how you maintain a car, we weren't doing routine maintenance. And we needed to make sure that we had periodic health assessments performed on an annual basis so that all the appropriate age and gender-specific kinds of assessments were performed so that we were preventing as well as protecting the individual for long-term health problems. And so instituting these new assessments, these annual health assessments, as well as expanding different types of cognitive assessments so that we could baseline capability and evaluate when areas, especially where we didn't have good technical tools, so we could see changes as a result of ongoing operations. So I think that's one of the major things that we've done. And the other, of course, is to improve how we capture health information across that continuum, from the point of injury all the way back into definitive care. We've improved how we manage cases, how we coordinate care at the hospitals, and how we document that and support transition to other doctors outside of our system, whether it's the VA or in the private sector.
So along those lines, the DOD and VA seem to be forging a stronger collaborative relationship in caring for personnel transitioning from one medical system to the other. Can you tell us a bit more about these efforts and what else are you doing to eliminate any gaps in care for service members and wounded warriors?
Well, over the past few years, we and the Department of Veterans Affairs has taken tremendous strides in coordinating and developing common ways to support our populations that we share. By working together, we've maintained and fostered a much more effective, aligned federal health partnership. We've traditionally worked together to develop quality and consistency of care standards and guidelines, particularly where we shared the same health issues, mental health, spinal injuries, some of the more what I would call traumatic injuries. During the war, though, we have also learned that it's much more important for us to ensure that we are sharing information that improves the transition of care between individual service members while they're on active duty and healing and getting ready to transition out of the active force into either a retired or other status where the VA would take on the responsibility for their longer-term care. So rehabilitation particularly is an area where we have forged a very strong relationship, us in a step-down mode and them more in a long-term mode, but making sure that handoff is much more effective and handling case management and care coordination has been a primary focus of the department with the VA over the last couple of years.
Ellen, as a follow-up, electronic medical records and all the variations across a service member's career is an important part of this issue between DOD and the Veterans Administration. Can you elaborate on the key areas associated with this?
Electronic medical records, I mean, the VA and DOD maintain electronic health records in our separate systems, but it's been obviously very important for us to be able to share information between systems, particularly for the Guard and Reserve population that come on active duty and go off active duty, have eligibility for care in both systems. So we need to assure that continuity for the patient's sake. But more important than that is President Obama announced his initiative and his priority that both the DoD and VA work towards what he calls a virtual lifetime electronic record. And this is a very important initiative because it sort of marries the president's view of not only in the federal government, but across the nation, the medical community to come up with standards for how we collect and store health records electronically. So it's not just a federal issue, but taking the national standards for achieving health records, then migrating that into a lifetime record that takes four individuals at the point of entry into the U.S. military and sharing data between DOD and VA, whether it's personnel data, whether it's benefit information, whether it's finance information, or whether it's health information. Because the VA has programs for active duty service members and their families that they're eligible for even while they're in the U.S. military. So it became very important for the Secretary of the VA and for the Secretary of the Department of Defense to identify ways in the future to share information from the point of accession into the U.S. military. Every time a status changes of that individual, whether it's their health or their benefit or anything else, that that information is shared with both agencies so that individual is informed about their options and their capabilities with respect to both agencies. So this is a significant undertaking. It's one that we are committed to supporting. We are actively engaged now in how we're going to accomplish that.
What about the efforts to expand this collaboration and establish a greater range of joint services in such areas as resource sharing, new facility construction, and other joint ventures?
Well, DOD and VA, again, have been working very hard on behalf of taxpayers to come up with ways to share where it's appropriate to do so. We have three major DOD medical centers that are located very close to the VA polytrauma centers. And so identifying very close relationships between those centers is very important, and sharing information, best practices, and helping to transition our patients between the two has become an important capability to us. There are 113 VA medical centers that partner with 137 military treatment facilities for a total of 323 direct sharing agreements between DOD and VA. And across all of that, there are about 158 unique services that we share for both patient populations. And that's very important for DOD because it improves the platform for training and sustaining important capabilities. And I say that not because our doctors need training, but we have a fairly healthy young population in the DOD. And one of the important capabilities that we need to preserve is trauma capability for combat operations. And so being able to work in hospitals where there are complex trauma and other issues that they might not see very often in the DOD population is very helpful to us. So we partner with the VA to improve sustainment capabilities. Obviously, they're well credentialed and certified, but it gives them an opportunity to practice medicine the way that they were trained. In the facility construction and other joint ventures, we have a shelf life extension program for pharmaceuticals. And the VA has used its program to extend expiration dates on products and their emergency pharmacy service program. And that's really helped them to avoid a cost to the VA of more than $214 million in 2008. It's been very helpful to us to collaborate with them in many different ways. We have a fairly significant joint operation being worked up at Great Lakes in the Chicago area, and that has created all kinds of opportunities for future collaboration.
Now, Ellen, earlier we talked a little bit about traumatic brain injury, or some people refer to it as TBI. Could you tell us about the recent revisions that have been made to the post-deployment health assessment and some of the new screening tools to detect and refer treatment to those individuals who may have traumatic brain injury? And what are we doing to treat these folks?
Well, DOD is committed to ensuring that all service members, but especially those with psychological health needs, and or traumatic brain injuries due to fall. It's not just a combat injury or even an automobile accident or a motorcycle accident. We are committed to actually assuring that we're the best in the world at understanding and diagnosing, treating, and rehabilitating traumatic brain injuries. In 2007, we defined a comprehensive plan about how we were going to do that. And because there is a strong overlap between mental health, especially PTSD and traumatic brain injury, mild particularly, we set about trying to become really very authoritative. We had an infusion of dollars from Congress, several hundreds of millions of dollars, to invest in capability to improve our diagnostics, to expand research in the area of the brain and understanding how to detect and evaluate injury, to get the evidence we need to understand what works and what doesn't. There's still quite a bit of anecdotal information about traumatic brain injury, mild and moderate particularly, that where there is a belief because of a few anecdotal successes that it will work for everyone. And we are committed to doing the due diligence in identifying and doing the research necessary to provide the evidence and the outcomes to show which of those works extraordinarily well. We've set up a center of excellence to do that. We've had a great deal of support with the VA. In fact, the deputy director of that center is a VA employee. We are engaged with academic centers of excellence. We've formed consortiums with the best academic centers on these topics in the country, and we've shared best practices with other countries. Israel is particularly experienced in blast injuries. Sharing their experiences in treatment has been extraordinarily helpful to us. It goes on and on and on, all the things that we're working on. But I would say we are rapidly becoming a center where other parts of the country can come to, if not share what they've learned, but also take what we've learned.
Now, you've frequently taken the lead for the department in working medical health and deployment issues with some of the other federal agencies. A good example was being on the Senior Oversight Committee, or the SOC. Could you talk about the role of this committee and explain its plan to implement department-wide changes in military health?
Well, the SOC, which stands for Senior Oversight Committee, it was established by the deputy secretaries of both the VA and DOD in 2007. And the focus of the SOC was to put management focus on addressing matters of concern, both of Congress, the public, and our beneficiary population, to ensure that we were doing everything possible to appropriately address the wounded, ill, and injured associated with the ongoing war. And they identified areas that were of particular concern where we could do better. One was to improve and streamline the disability evaluation system and improve the way in which both agencies identify and compensate individuals for their wounds and their injuries over a lifetime of service. The second concern was about what we don't know about traumatic brain injury and PTSD, and to ensure that we were postured for success to get ahead of the bow wave of demand for these two injuries, which were perceived to be either unclear because of the science or because the nation as a whole didn't have the capacity to deal with mental health challenges that the war and an ongoing war would present to us. The third had to do with case management and coordination of care between DOD and VA, sort of the seam between after they were acutely cared for and could no longer serve, you know, making sure that that handoff was managed well and that rehabilitation process was supported effectively. The fourth had to do with how we share information so that critical pieces of information, allergies and other things that were important to improve the continuity of that care, didn't get dropped. Facilities had to do with a perspective that the DOD particularly wasn't structured in such a way to provide ready access and support structures in a physical sense for individuals who are recovering from pretty complex injuries, you know, limb loss or very significant trauma. Even though they could heal and then go back to serve in the U.S. military, because it took pretty long time for them to recover, we didn't have ramps and we didn't have barracks that lent themselves to that, because we were usually a, you know, mostly healthy force. So adjusting the facilities to accommodate people while they were healing was something we needed to do. We also realized then in the process that many of the rules that had been put into place, either by regulation or in law, they were for the normal benefits and barriers to abuse and other kinds of things. But when you have a population that needed support, the rules didn't necessarily apply in the same way, and it actually put up barriers to getting them what they needed. And so we had to have a part of this effort to focus on what laws, regulations, and things could be reduced that would improve our ability to support this particular population. And lastly, again, looking at specific personnel pay and financial rules that were written again for a peacetime environment, what now applies if you change your status? Because in the old, you know, the system changes your status once you move out of a combat environment, you don't get combat pay. And there were different rules applied at different times. And when you were injured, it seemed as though an individual would get their pay status changed. Mm. And it's counterproductive and very confusing to the family who had to take care of those issues. So these were the main areas that the SOC sort of organized around, and they assigned line of action teams with very specific high energy focus. I mean, we had weekly briefings where we had to go and talk about what we were doing to improve the situation in each one of these areas. I happened to be I was the LOA lead, the line of action lead for traumatic brain injury and psychological health or PTSD. But each one of those areas was given a microscopic review on a weekly basis for almost 18 months before they switched to a monthly review process. So I would say that this SOC process was extraordinarily helpful in terms of mobilizing both agencies to address these in a coherent, effective, and streamlined way. But it's now less intense, but still very important to both leaders.
That's great. That's fantastic. What about the future of military health affairs? We will ask Ellen Embry, Acting Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.